We'll be coming back into our study of the mind. And last week we introduced one of the noun forms. We've covered the word nous, which is deals with the thinking faculty of the mind, the intellectual thinking faculty, which we use to think. It's that which thoughts pass through dianoia, and so they pass through the intellectual thinking faculty. And when they do, the thing that when we put it into use, we looked at the verb naeo, and we tied that off a couple of weeks ago. And so naeo is where you really consider carefully the facts. You sit down, consider the facts, though. It's not running on the soul. This is an intellectual thing where you use your nous. And so as you do, you consider the facts carefully, you come to conclusions, and you come to comprehension of the subject that you're considering. And so you're really, this is putting the nous into activity with naeo. But the noun we introduced last week was another noun with a ma ending in the Greek, naema. And the ma ending indicates the result of an action. And so it's a result of activity. And so it's the result when thoughts do pass through your mind, when you carefully consider the facts and you come to conclusions and comprehension, it comes down to how your mind functions, the functionings of the mind, and what comes forth as you think your way through the facts. And so the result is you come to the functionings of the mind, the workings of the mind, the result of what you've been thinking about. And so this is again, we've noticed this term by way of introduction. We did emphasize that it occurs six times only. And so it's not a big term. Sometimes if you're studying through the book of Second Corinthians, you might think it occurs quite often because it does occur 5 out of 6 times in Second Corinthians. And so Paul is the only one to use the ma ending term, but he does so. As he does so, he describes the workings, the functionings of one's intellectual thinking faculty as you do consider the facts. And so it goes through, but it is intellectual, the result of your intellectual thinking. And so it's the workings of the mind, what you think about, how you think, and and the conclusions that you arrive at. And so it deals with those sorts of things. But it occurs 5 times in Second Corinthians. It occurs once in Philippians. The other thing that we pointed out about it is 3 times in Second Corinthians, it is connected to Satan. And so we're looking at the functionings, the workings of Satan's mind, the way that Satan's mind functions. One time it is used specifically of Israel and how the functionings of their mind, the workings of their mind, when they were in the wilderness. And twice it is used, once in Second Corinthians and once in Philippians, in a good sense, and dealing with the workings of the mind. And so this is where we didn't finish last week, so we're going to finish off what we looked at. But last week we did look at Satan, and I want to go back to the first occurrence of the word again. We pointed it out, we looked at it, and we didn't go into detail in the context. But it is in a context that does give us one of the lusts and one of the ways that Satan can attack a Christian. And so it is in a context in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and down in verse 11. And we did read through that last week. But it connects in a passage and it relates to 1 Corinthians chapter 5, where you had a man who was involved with his mother or stepmother with his father's wife. It was an immorality. It was something even the Gentiles were ashamed to speak about. But these saints, they were letting it go and kind of proud almost that it was happening. And so Paul told them they needed to deal with the guy and and so that he could come around. And so in the end, the man did change. And so you come to 2 Corinthians, he's changed, but they won't forgive him. And so there is an unforgiving spirit. And so that's something that is attributed to Satan in the context here. And so that's the way it fits into this context. But I'll read the verse again, and we have to retranslate it a little bit. The subject is we, not Satan. And so really it says, lest we should be taken and taken advantage of directly by Satan. And so Satan is the direct agent here with a little preposition hoopah, which in this has the idea of, in this context of being directly by the direct agency of Satan. Satan could take advantage of you, and he was taking advantage of them. But the rest of the verse is why we came here last week, because he says to it by explanation, he says, for we are not ignorant. And so we're not mindless ones. We're not without an experiential knowledge, and we've all experienced this. Now, Paul's writing, speaking of himself here with we, and he's speaking of himself and the Corinthians. And so they all have some knowledge of this. They're not ignorant, he says, of his devices. And the word devices, that is our word naema. That is the workings, the functionings of Satan's mind, the way that his mind works and the results of what takes place. And so Paul wasn't ignorant. The Corinthians weren't ignorant. And it was something that they'd all had some experience with, that Satan is the one who puts thoughts in your mind and lusts there in some cases. And so there are a number of things that Satan does put the believer to the test with. And he can take advantage of you. We can be taken advantage by Satan directly. And so he's the one, he can set up circumstances. He can put thoughts that come from circumstances into your mind from external thoughts, those that come into the mind. And so this is where we were last week. Though last week we did also look at Satan, about Satan. And we noted that Satan wasn't always this way. And every one of the three naemas used of Satan, they are negative. And they can have a negative effect on believers. And so these are things, and once that you, one of those occurrences does relate to unbelievers. But we're not ignorant, he says, of the workings of his mind, his naema. And so it's something we're not, we do know about it, and we have some experiential knowledge of Satan and what he can do. And so this is something Paul reminds these Corinthians about, that he does have some workings, the way Satan works. He's a pretty crafty individual, as a spirit being. Now again, before we move further along today, I want to point out that when Satan was created, God created spirit beings, and he created them all at one time. And there were myriads of spirit beings, and there were different rankings of spirit beings. There were different kinds. You had at the top, you had cherubim, you had the seraphim, and then you had those of the messenger, the angelic ranks, and different categories of angels. And so when God created them, there was absolutely nothing wrong with spirit beings. When God created them, they were already here with the creation of the material universe. And we pointed that out from Job 38. And so it is something they were here. And there was nothing unrighteous. There was no such thing as unrighteousness. There was no such thing as sin. There was nothing bad. There was nothing that we go through in hamartiology, the doctrine of sin, the lists of terms that describe those things that are unrighteous. God was absolutely perfect in every way. He was infinitely righteous, infinitely perfect. And when he created spirit beings, they were all good, just like everything he did with the recreation. So in Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, you already had spirit beings who were created. And so they, the sons of God, the morning stars sang together when they were created. And the sons of God, they shouted for joy. And so the spirit beings, they shouted for joy now that there was something out there. They were aware of God, that God was around, but God was he was immense. They had no idea, no location where they could meet with God. God just was. And so God created the heavens and the earth. When he did so, now you had starry spaces. And so he created them out of nothing, but now you have starry spaces. And now you have three heavens. You have with the earth, you have the earth, you have the starry spaces, then you have the third heaven that goes out beyond the atmospheric heaven and the solar system. You have the third heaven where God determined this was where his residency would be. So now there was a place where spirit beings could meet with God, and so they did, and had that capacity. Now Satan, he was still good. There was nothing wrong with Satan at this time. In fact, we found in Ezekiel chapter 28 that Satan, he was the most beautiful. He was beautiful as a created being. And also he was full of wisdom. And so being spirit, he was rational. He was a rational being. No substance, but he was rational, as all of the spirit beings are. And so he was absolutely nothing wrong with Satan. And God describes him. He lived in the garden of God. He lived on a little planet, as we said, a little speck out here in the solar system, Earth. Why Earth? You'd have to ask God why. And he isn't going to tell you right now. But he did put man, he put mankind on Earth ultimately, but you had a perfect planet. There was nothing wrong with Earth. And Satan, he was in charge. He was the overshadowing, but he was an anointed cherub. So he was the one who was a kind of a ruler. And he was over the other spirit beings. He was the overshadowing spirit being, the overshadowing cherub. And so this is something we do know about Satan. There was nothing wrong with him. And he reiterated in Ezekiel 28, again, how Satan was absolutely, he was perfect in all of his ways. And what he did, there was nothing wrong with him until a day. And so now you do have the solar system, you do have a day now, and you have a day when his heart, his inner being, and so as a spirit being, it was his inner being, his rational capacity to think, this was something he was lifted up. And what was he lifted up with? Well, he was lifted up, doesn't use the word pride right there, but he is the one who is responsible for pride. And so he was lifted up with pride. Why? Because of his beauty. And so he knew that he was beautiful. And he covered himself with stones he was flashing stones, beautiful, the descriptions of Satan. But he was, God created him, he was beautiful. And it was absolutely perfect in every way that God created him. But then it says, until the day, and the AV said iniquity. Ul, it has the idea of something that was bad, unrighteousness. The Septuagint does translate the term with an adikia term, but it's a ma ending, adikia. And so the result of an unrighteous thing here that came about with Satan. The first thing was his lust was he saw his beauty and he thought that he was really something. And so that he was lifted up with pride. The first unrighteousness that came into the world and into the solar system and into anything. It was the beginning of unrighteousness. And then he went on and acted upon that, and he sinned. And so it says that he sinned. So we went through those descriptions of Satan in Ezekiel 28. How did he sin? What did he do? Well, he also sold a bill of goods. He merchandised. He was a good salesman. And when he did sell things, who was there to sell it to? Well, other spirit beings. And we see in Revelation 12, about 3 or thereabouts, he describes a serpent and he drew in a third of the stars of the heaven representing spirit beings, angels. And so these are his army, and they're identified later on in Revelation 12 as being his army, his angelic army. And so he drew a third of them. And so he was conniving. He was quite convincing, and he drew them in after him to follow him. And so they fell too. Now that takes us on back over to Isaiah 14. And there we noted also, we won't go through all of it, but he's going to elevate himself, but he's going to ascend. He says he's going to ascend up above the glory clouds of God. He's going to proceed to do this. And he's going to proceed to do several things, he says there. But the worst thing is, he says, I will proceed to be like the Most High. And so he is going to be like God. And so he's going to be, because of his beauty, full of wisdom. He was perfect up until that point. And now he could be something else. He was like God. He could be like God. He had to ascend from earth up into the third heaven above the glory clouds of God. He would be like God, though. And so that ends up to be where he sins. He does something. He acts upon his trespass. And here again, I've mentioned it, the foolishness of this. How foolish for a created being to think that he can, because he's beautiful. Why was he beautiful? Why was he the, who anointed him to be the anointed cherub? What did he overshadow? Who was he? Who brought it all into being, including him? Well, he didn't do it himself, so there wasn't any reason to be too proud. But his heart, his inner being was lifted up because of his beauty. And so Satan fell. Now his fellowship with God, he could go in amongst God, but he was now an enemy of God, and he is referred to as the adversary. Well, that's where we kind of left off with some of that. I suppose we left a few things out in reviewing some of those things, but that's where we saw Satan. We looked at him in the Old Testament. Before the fall, he was absolutely perfect. There was no such thing as unrighteousness. With his fall, when he had his trespass, when he gave it a place in his mind that he could be like God, and, well, unrighteousness entered in with his trespass. That led to sin, which was the first time there was sin. And so he's the one who established unrighteousness and sin. When God created the heavens and the earth, but before that, when he created spirit beings, everything was good and everything was perfect. And so it took a created being with a will to use his will to, in a negative way, in a bad way, for unrighteousness and sin to come into the whole, to come into existence. Never before had there been such a thing as unrighteousness and those different parts and aspects of unrighteousness before them. And so it all started with Satan. Well, Satan had some workings of his mind, and we looked at some of that last week. And he did, he was pretty subtle. And so he's pretty cunning. And that's one of the terms we'll look at dealing with Satan. But in the Old Testament, he worked through the serpent. Now the serpent, the snake, it wasn't something to be feared in the Garden of Eden. And so going back to Genesis 3, you had the serpent, but the serpent talks to Eve. Now, Satan was behind the serpent then. And it was a beautiful creature. It didn't crawl around on its belly eating dust. But somehow it was not bright, but it was a beautiful creature. Eve didn't cower away when it appeared to her, when it spoke to her. But it was very cunning. And so we find back in Revelation 12, we'll notice that he was, the serpent was Satan, the devil. And so as he does so, we'll come back to 12:9, a couple verses there we'll notice that do define him in the New Testament by name. But in the Old Testament, I didn't review it, but in Isaiah chapter 14, in verse 12, 13 is Lucifer, the son of the morning, son of, and so he is Lucifer. He was a shining one. He was bright. And so that's the way he was created, but he fell. And now he doesn't go by Lucifer anymore. He's known by us as the devil and Satan. And so in the Old Testament, he was the one who was behind the serpent. And we go back there and we find how his mind worked, the workings of his mind. How did his mind work? Well, his mind worked very crafty, very cunning, very slippery, very tricky. And so he was back there with Eve. And so he can be with us today. And Paul and those who were living back in the first century in Corinth, they were not ignorant of the workings of his mind, the functionings of his mind, how Satan thought, the results of what he thought in his mind. And so as a spirit being, he has mental capacity, he did have thoughts. But after his fall, by his will, it got to him, and he was responsible totally for this whole thing of unrighteousness and sin. So let's go ahead and I guess that was a long introduction, but it was meant to be a review just to take us back into it again, just to remind us where we are. Didn't finish last week, so we'll try to finish part of it this week anyway. So let's go ahead and get started. Father, we're thankful for your word as we look into it again. Again, might the Spirit guide us. We're thankful that you are who you are, infinite in every realm of righteousness. Everything about you is infinite. And that when we see what Satan did and says it came into the world, Satan was the source of bringing in that which was the opposite of what you are. And so we're thankful again, though, that you are who you are and that by grace you have provided salvation for mankind when they respond by faith. And again, that you don't leave it to us to do it, but the Holy Spirit ministers to our spirits so that we can come to not only know the gospel and believe it and be saved by it. We're thankful that it is your work from start to finish. And yet we do have three enemies, and you have described them, and you've given us the means to have victory over them, and we're thankful for that. But as we proceed now and study, just ask that the Spirit might guide our thoughts as we continue on, and we'd be thankful. Amen. Okay, now when we want to pick up a little bit on Satan now, and we're still working, we're moving into the New Testament as it's bound in our Bibles, but we're going to go to the Gospel of John this morning to begin. And this does describe something of what goes on in Satan's mind. We saw what went on there. We'll come back to his initial workings of his mind when it came down to the temptation with Eve. We'll come back to that, Lord willing. But as we get over to chapter 8 of John and verse 44, verse I'm sure we're all familiar with, but he says here, we'll pick up just a little bit more. He said that he came forth from God And he didn't come forth because of himself, but he was sent on a mission by the Father, to paraphrase a little bit. And so he asked them, why do you not experientially know my speech? And so the things that he is saying to them, the content that he's saying to them, and he tells, says, why? Because you cannot hear my word. And so they don't hear with understanding. They can't hear what he is saying. They can hear vocally what he's saying, but they don't get the content. And the content, they can't hear his word. And so he says, you are out from your father, the devil. And so they are out from him as to their source, as to how, what they, how they live. And so they, he has those who are his children, not by birth, but they do belong to him, and they do from birth on, they're his, unless they get saved. And so anyway, and the lusts, the strong desires, and this is used very definitely in a negative sense, it's a bad term here, can be used in good sense, of good strong desires, but you, and the lusts, the strong desires from your father, you, Thelema, you, or fellow, you desirously will to do. And so they want to do the desirous wills of their father, the devil. And so they, it's not just that they will do them, but they want to do them. He was a murderer from the beginning, not from the beginning. Don't have an article. It's not the specific beginning, but it's a quality of a beginning. Beginning of what? Well, this goes back to when he began to slay things. Now, when we look at that, you have, what is death anyway? To be a manslayer, it is interesting. It is a manslayer. But what is death? James chapter 2, verse 26, death is separation. And so it's a separation from God. And so the first separation from God that took place was Satan. He had access to God to a point, and he could go into the presence of God as he did in Job. But then you find that he also, he drew a third of the spirit beings. And so they all fell. And so there was a spiritual separation between these and God. They no longer were in fellowship with God, the creator. They had nothing to do with God in that sense. Yet they did have, Satan did go in with other spirit beings. I will mention that a little, in a little bit. But anyway, he was a murderer. But then he's the one, what did God do when he created spirit beings? What did he do when he created mankind and animals and things? He created life. And so there was life. Who's responsible for death? It's a manslayer, Satan. Whatever there is death, whenever there's a separation from God, Satan is the one who's responsible for it. He's the one who brings it about. And that's what he did when in the garden with Adam and Eve. With Eve, he fooled her. And so he did deceive her. Didn't he thoroughly deceived Eve? But as he did so, he brought about her fall and her separation spiritually from God. And so there was a spiritual death there, a separation from God. Now, when Adam knowingly partook of the fruit as Eve offered it to him, what happened? He died. And that's what God said would take place. Dying, you will die. And so you eat from this tree, from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The moment that you eat from that, you're going to begin a process of death, and you're going to die at that moment. So there was spiritual death, and there was a process of dying physically. Adam lived many years after. And so he lived physically, but he was dying. And his body took him a long time because of the conditions at that time. And they did have longevity of life. But with the after the flood, things changed. Now man doesn't live so long. And so with the Israelites in the wilderness, they get 70, 3 score and 10 years, and And by strength, they happened to get 4 score years to the 80. That was something that was a long time after the flood. But this is something that we can live. I just noticed online that Alan Greenspan turned 111. So anyway, that's a long time today, but they lived a lot longer than that back when and back then before the flood. And so things have changed there. But Satan was the one who was responsible for death. And so Adam and Eve died spiritually, and immediately there was the fellowship they had with God walking in the garden. That ended. God, now you had the results of the fall as they were kicked out of the garden, and now things changed with mankind. But it was all because of the way Satan's mind operates and what he designed. He wasn't content to go down by himself. He is Bonnie Rouse. And so he drew those, Adam and Eve and other, and the human race as a result, after him as fallen beings who would die. And so he was a manslayer from the beginning. He's responsible for death. And so he was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth because, and the reason was because there is no truth in him. And so when he speaks the lie, it's an articular the lie, he speaketh from his own because he's a liar. And that's what he goes on to, the Lord went on to explain it. For he is a liar and the father of it. And so he's the one who started lies and lying. He's deceitful. And so he is a liar. And so he's the one responsible for lying. And he does have many who are not just his born ones over in Ephesians 2, 2. We do notice that he has sons, mature sons. And so they're some of his children are better doing his desirous will, which they want to do, than others. And so this was what we used to be in Ephesians chapter 2, when we were dead in trespasses and sins. But then he went on to say that in the past we ordered our lives according to the course, the age of this world system. And so according to the prince of the power of the air, and the spirit that now works or energizes in the sons of disobedience, not children there in the Greek, but it's the sons, the weos, his sons. He has mature sons. And so we used to be there before salvation. We won't go through, we're not going through Ephesians 2, but you get down to verse 5 and verse 8, but God. And so when you get to God, God intervened and provided salvation for Paul and the Ephesian Christians and for other Christians. Now at the same time, Satan energizes his sons, but God also energizes us. And so in Philippians 2:13, I can't pass by that. When we look at Satan's energizing, you also have God's the one who energizes us, but he's the one who works in us both to be willing and to be desirously willing and to be energetically doing of his good pleasure. And so that's, again, something that we notice there. But Satan, this is what he came to be, though. And he was this from a beginning. And the beginning that is referred to here goes back to the moment that he began to be lifted up with pride. And when he trespassed, that's when it all began and moved on into his sin. And so that's where all of the unrighteousness, we'll just leave it at that, began. Now, he's a slanderer. That is, he's a false accuser. And so he does have his own lusts. And so we saw that he is the one who people have. He has strong desires that he wants to do. And we saw that he's a murderer, manslayer, he's a liar. But we do have some evidence of this going back before the law. I'm going to move back over to 2 Corinthians chapter 11 for a moment, and we move on now after the fall of Satan, after the fall of Adam and Eve, or we come to the fall of Adam and Eve, but this was before there was any law. This goes back into the first couple and into mankind. And so we'll be back at this verse. I plan to be anyway sometime, but this is in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3. And so we're not going to cover this verse right now except to point one thing out. But Paul says, but I fear lest by some means, by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve. Now notice he was tricky. He thoroughly deceived her. And that's what this word beguiled, it is the word for not just deceived, but he thoroughly deceived Eve. And so she was thoroughly deceived. And he did this. How did he do it? He did it through his subtlety, his craftiness. And so he was very crafty. He was very cunning. And so he thoroughly deceived her. And so he was concerned that the workings of your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. Now he did thoroughly deceive Eve. And so over in 1 Timothy, Paul makes reference to that again in 1 Timothy chapter 2. And points out that Adam was he was the first one who was formed. It was like taking a piece of clay and forming it. And so he was formed first. And so out from the dust of the ground, Genesis 2:7, but he formed Adam first and then Eve. As he structured Eve, built Eve out from the side of Adam in 2:18. Now, notwithstanding, it says in 1 Timothy 2:15, notwithstanding, she shall be saved. That's not what I wanted, but Chip skipped the verse. And Adam was not deceived. And so he was not deceived. Simply deceived. Paul states here that Adam did it knowingly, and we know that he did. God had told him in 2:17 that he could eat from any tree of the garden, but except for the one in the midst of the garden, the tree of good and evil, the knowledge of good and evil, he could eat of any tree except that one, but in the day that you eat therefrom, dying, you're going to die. And so he's going to begin death. But the woman being thoroughly deceived, and so Eve was thoroughly deceived. Adam wasn't even deceived, but she was thoroughly deceived. He tricked her. He was cunning. He was crafty. He was tricky. Very slippery. But she was in the transgression. And so there had to be a law for there to be a transgression, Romans 4:15. And Romans 4:15, if you don't have without law, there is no transgression. But there was one law, only one rule, 2:17 of Genesis. You shall not eat from this one tree. Well, that was something that she was fooled. And she was thoroughly deceived. We don't want to be deceived in that way. Paul was concerned for the Corinthians. Let's go on back now, and we said we'd come back here to Genesis chapter 3. And we're going to look at how Satan's mind worked, the workings of his mind as he did this. We find that he was crafty, he was cunning. And so there was now a deviousness in his mind. It wasn't right. He didn't see things. He wasn't doing as he would have done before his sin and before his transgression. He didn't have a law. He just, there was no transgression, but he had a trespass is what I was trying to say, but he did trespass and he sinned. Now just notice, he could take what God does, and sometimes some people are very devious and they can take parts of truth, and they can say something is partly true, and they can make it believable. And yet they slip in just enough or leave something out that changes the concept that's being stated. Well, this is what Satan did. He took what God said, but he twisted it. He left some out. He added to it. He changed it. Or he twisted the what's behind the statement. And so we're going to look at 3:1, where it says, "Now the serpent, that is the shining one, was more subtle," and that has the idea he was more crafty, he was more cunning than any beast of belonging to the field which Jehovah Elohim, the Lord God Jehovah Elohim, had made. Anything that he had made, fabricated here that he had made. "And he said unto the woman, Yea, hath God said?" And so the question is, God said? And so what did God say? Well, "hath God said, you shall not eat from every tree of the garden?" And so most of what he said was true. Just a little change. And so what God had said, that you could eat from any tree of the garden, you may freely eat, in verse 6:2:16. But from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so he leaves that out. "And the woman said," but she heard what Adam had told her. She wasn't there when God told Adam what he could eat from and what the one tree he was not to eat from. But so "the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat from the fruit of the trees of the garden." And so that was true, and that's what Satan said. "But from the tree of the fruit of the tree, which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said." And she says what Adam had told her, and she adds to it, "you shall not eat from it." And so that's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so she gets that right. Adam had told her. But then she adds, "neither shall you touch it." Now that isn't what God said over in 2:17. He didn't say don't touch it. But I can see that Adam, he was concerned, so he said, told Eve, don't eat from it and don't even touch it. Because if you touched it, well, that would be one step towards eating it. And so you don't even touch it, don't even. And so anyway, that seems that Adam probably added that to it. But he said, that you shall not eat from it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. Now, what did death mean to them? What did death mean to Satan? Satan didn't know about physical death. He didn't know definitely about spiritual death. But God said, dying you shall die. And so this was something that was made very clear, that you would die. But what was death? There had been no physical death before. You had no idea what death was. But you would die. It wasn't good. And so this was something Eve said. Now the serpent in verse 4, and here's where we see how he's pretty crafty. He said you can eat from every tree in the garden. But then the serpent said unto the woman, to Eve, you shall not surely die. Literally says dying, you will not die. And so he contradicts what God said. And so he does, now comes this, he's deceiving her. You shall not die. Dying you shall not die, for, and he says, for God doth know that in the day that you eat therefrom, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as Elohim. And I'm sure most of you have changed that small g to a capital G. And you won't be as gods, you'll be like God. There was only one God, Elohim. As far as the gods revealed himself, God is Elohim. And so you'll be like Elohim. You'll be like God, not like gods, but there were no other gods, but you would be like Elohim. And so knowing, and how would they be like God? knowing good and evil. So they had no concept of good or evil. They didn't know what would make you happy. They didn't know what would bring calamity upon you. They had no idea of these concepts. And Eve didn't have any idea of that. And so he contradicts what God says. And he was pretty tricky about how he did it. And he was a beautiful creature there talking with Satan behind it, behind the serpent talking. And so as the result then, we see what it had to do with Eve. Now when the woman Eve saw that the tree was good for food, okay, the first thing, hey, you can eat it from any tree, but just this one. There's plenty of food around, but she sees the tree that they were not to eat from. Oh, well, it's good for food. And so she sees something there, gives it a place, good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes. And so this was really a good-looking tree. And so that the fruit was really good-looking. And a tree to be desired to make one prudent, and so to gain some knowledge. They didn't have knowledge of good and evil. And so this would give you some not wisdom, but you'd be prudent, you'd gain some knowledge. And she took from the fruit thereof and did eat. And so that was the first act. Now I could see her trespass there when she saw the fruit of the tree. It was good for food. That it was something that was pleasant to look at. It was, and something that would be good. And she could gain some knowledge. And that's what Satan had lied to her about. Well, it wasn't a lie because it did happen. But he denied what God said. And what God said did happen. Dying, you will begin to die. He died. He began to die and died. And so she ate of it. And that was the first thing. But she was thoroughly deceived. Now, God didn't count that to Eve as sin. And so the sin did not, God didn't see it coming through because she was thoroughly deceived. And so she did, but she fell. And so there was some change. There's no doubt that she was stripped of a garment of light. And so she was, they found out later on, they recognized they had been stripped, both of them, after the next part of the verse, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Now remember back in 1 Timothy chapter 2 that Adam was not deceived in the least. He knew what was going on. Eve, she was thoroughly deceived. And so there was some excuse with her. And the eyes of both of them both were opened, and they knew that they were stripped. And so there's the word, when it says they knew they were naked, the word naked here does have the idea of stripped, not just naked. They didn't all of a sudden become modest or something. They'd lost something. There was something that they had been covered with. They were stripped though, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons and so forth. We're not going to pursue that further, except that Satan was very crafty. He was very subtle, and that's the way that he operates. He's a slick operator. And so the workings of his mind, they're not for your good, and they're not going to bring a result in good. And so it's always an ulterior thing. And his children, they have the same kind of a mindset he does. They're his children, and his sons are really good at it. But he does have his approach to believers. And so he does deal with us. Now, we do find, and I'm not going, don't have time, obviously, to go there, but in Romans chapter 5, you work that context very carefully, and you do find that beginning in verse 12, that Adam sinned. And so the result of Adam's sin was man died from Adam all the way up through to Moses. They kept on dying, not because of their own sin, but because of Adam's sin. And so it demonstrated that your physical death came as a result of Adam Adam's sin. And then you come on down to the trespass of Adam, and that's something that by one man's trespass. And so you have sin, looking at sin nature entering into the world. When he gave it a place in his mind, that's when sin, the sin nature, he fell. And he sinned as a result. As he partook of the fruit, he sinned. He stepped across the bound that God, the boundary that God had laid for him, and he died spiritually by his trespass immediately. The only thing that offsets that is the work of Christ by the works of another man. And so you have two men following on about verse 16 down through 18, down through the chapter there, but you do have it in Romans chapter 5. Adam sinned, but he sinned not being deceived, though. And so he was responsible for the fall that the whole race then is the result. Now Satan's, the working of Satan's mind can be seen, and we can see how he worked with the beginning of, after the beginning of the church in the New Testament. And we see some things, that he did in the Old Testament or things that would still be relative to things that he does within the church with believers. But he has his methods, and he has his own methods. We'll notice that as well. But Satan, I've mentioned a few times, and I want to go back and look at the names of Satan. We'll go back to Revelation 12, where we started it. We mentioned it in by way of introduction, I believe. But as we go back to Revelation chapter 12, we find reference to Satan. And I'm going to just kind of skim down through some of this. It deals with Satan and his approach against Christ and against God's people, the Jews. But he says in there in verse 3, "And there appeared another wonder, a sign miracle in heaven. And behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon the heads." And so these heads and horns and such, they represent kings. "And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born." And so you have the great red dragon, and he drew a third of the stars of the heavens. Now the stars of the heavens does represent those who inhabit the stars, and it's the spirit beings. These would be angels. We find them identified later on in verse 7. And so you have Michael the archangel. He fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. And so those who are the stars who he drew with him by his tail, these are his angels. He does have his own angels. And then it goes on, we're going to just skip down to verse 9, "And the great dragon was cast out of," and that is out from heaven. And so that is the one who's called the devil. And so he's the slanderer. And so he does slander. He's the devil and Satan, that is the adversary, which deceiveth the whole world. And so he is one who's a deceiver. He deceived Eve. He thoroughly deceived her. Didn't deceive Adam, but he deceives now. He deceives the whole world. And so just kind of really focusing just on his titles as we see them here. But the dragon, he is the old serpent. The old serpent. That's how you find that the snake was, Satan was behind the serpent. He wasn't a snake, but he was behind it. And what was said by the, he spoke through the serpent. And so this was where it took place. But he was also he's also identified as Satan, the adversary. And I don't know my count. I just did a quick count on the occurrences of Satan in the Old Testament. I have to go back and recount, but probably around 21 times or so. And you have about 13 times, maybe a little off there, but about 13 times it was used of Satan. No, it's translated Satan, and it's just transliterated Satan in translation. But it's sometimes it's an adversary, a man who's an adversary, be the plural adversaries against men. And so those are things that we notice there. But he was an adversary. And so we'll come back to this next week. I don't want to go too far. We'll come back and pick up a little bit with these names as they're identified. The name Satan is just a transliteration that comes out of the Hebrew, and he is an adversary, but he's the devil and the serpent. But he was the one who was deceived the nations. But the place it all began with the workings of his mind was to contradict what God said. And so he opposed, he stated what God said, but then he turned it around. Dying, you won't die. It won't happen. And so this was his way of doing it. He tricked her completely. So she paid attention to this tree now. And she was told, you don't eat from it, don't even touch it. But now she looks at it, oh, it looks good, it's good for food, and it's pleasant to look at. And so Satan got through to her. And so at that point, Adam and Eve were innocent up to that point. But now with the temptation by Eve's will and then by Adam's will knowingly, he partook of the fruit. And so that's how this all came. But the workings of his mind, we don't want to be affected by the workings of his mind. So we do need to understand how his mind works. Remember that he is pretty cunning, crafty, pretty sly. And so you do have to be aware. So we'll spend a little bit of time again in a quick review of Satan's lust that he puts forth. Next week, Lord willing. Father, we're thankful for your word. We're thankful that it is true and we can depend upon it. And that, just as you stated to Adam in the garden, what you said was true. And though, Satan denied it and said it was different and deceived Eve, again, might we be aware though of Satan's workings and, take your word as to what you say and believe it. And where it applies to us, live it, but might we not be fooled by Satan into thinking otherwise. And so again, we're just thankful for the privilege we have of being grace believers and assembling together. Just ask for your blessing in the next service with Pascal, and we'd be grateful. Amen.